Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Anthony. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good.
Thank you for agreeing to do this.
You're welcome.
Ian, for the people that maybe don't know you, would you like to introduce yourself?
All right, well, my name is Ian Brighthope. I'm 77 years young and retired physician, medical practitioner, researcher, and I guess advisor to the medical profession who have an open mind about healthcare. Started after my agricultural science qualification in 1965. I did a few years of research in animal nutrition and some teaching at senior secondary level, and then decided to do medicine. I studied medicine for 6 years, graduated in 1974, and was disappointed with my medical training because there was no advice or real serious training in nutrition and making people healthy. It's basically trained to think and act in terms of disease and treating people with illnesses and disease, and that's not healthcare. So I went into practice for a couple of years and was doing anesthetics, treating people in hospital with various complaints, then travelled around the world looking for other ways of thinking and doing in the health sphere. And so came back to Australia in 78, started helping with the development of an organisation called the Orthomolecular Medical Association of Australia, which is basically looking at diet and vitamins and megavitamins for the treatment of both physical and mental illness. And a few of us got together, formed an organisation called the OMAA, with the Orthomolecular Medical Association of Australia. We tried to run some courses for doctors. It was too difficult to understand what orthomolecular meant. So we changed the name to the College of Nutritional Medicine, and then started attracting doctors to study and treat clinically patients with nutritional medicine approaches. That includes diet and the use of nutrients, including plant nutrients, animal nutrients, vitamins, minerals, trace elements, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and the removal of toxic heavy metals and the detoxification of systems using various nutrients to stimulate the liver and kidneys to improve detoxification processes. People who'd been exposed to poisons, too many hydrocarbon pesticides, herbicides, and so on. Then the college grew. We started a fellowship program in terms of the training, specialized training in nutritional medicine, including nutritional psychiatry, nutritional oncology, nutritional cardiology, and nutritional immunology, as well as others. And the college grew to the point where we started examining the candidates for fellowships. So there are many doctors now, over the last 42 years, have gained a fellowship in nutritional and environmental medicine. And I've been involved with the college ever since we started it. I was the founding president. And just recently, they had a conference in Melbourne titled Long COVID. So these doctors are now aware of the side effects of the vaccines and also the side effects of the virus. But the vaccines are the major issue. And that's what we're focused on, and I'm focused on now. In August last year, 2002, we started an organization. I founded an organization called the World of Wellness, or the WOW. Cheekily call the WOW future and the WHO the past, the WHO being the World Health Organization. We want to have some input, serious input, into future health policy in this country, because the WHO has just driven vaccines to the point where we're becoming poorer buying these expensive vaccines that are not stopping infection, they're not stopping transmission, and they have huge number of serious adverse effects, including unnecessary deaths. As far as this so-called vaccine is concerned, it's a GMO, a genetically modified organism or thereabouts, or it fits the definition of a GMO, companies did not get permission from our agency here that regulate GMOs. So from the legal perspective, it is being argued now that these vaccines, even despite that they were put up for emergency use authorization, that they were not legally authorized. And so we need to look at legal action against the various authorities, including the government, who I believe did not fulfill their responsibilities to the people of Australia and the people of Australia's rights to have informed consent about a new experimental gene therapy. So that's the long and the short of it, Anthony. I think I haven't covered very much at all, but that's really a pricey.
Yeah,
of,
and a good background. One. Fancy a government that bans ivermectin to get through a experimental product.
Well, the banning of ivermectin is classical government when it comes to a government that's basically being bought by some of the biggest, most powerful companies in the world. The capture of our government, our politicians and our regulators has been remarkable. Mm. And it's been remarkable in a sense that those remarks are, I think, the most sinister in the world, because this is an experimental therapy, and to give it to an entire population and to force the entire population, and I say force because when people are coerced into having a treatment without informed consent, it is something that we need to have examined thoroughly, and the people responsible for the damage need to be held to account. And when I say held to account at the highest judicial level that we possibly can hold them to account in this country. This capture has been going on for decades now. The hijacking of health by the medical profession is one thing, but the hijacking of the medical profession by commercial interests such as Big Pharma is the end stage of our loss of freedom, our threat to our democracy, and also a major threat to the health of the population and, I believe, to the health of future generations.
Mm. And the people that are still watching the television would have no idea of what you just said.
They have no idea at all. I mean, this is another thing that the populations have been dumbed down to the point where critical thinking does not occur in the majority of the population. And I'm saying that also the lack of critical thinking in the majority of our population, of our politicians, our regulators, and also my profession. My profession are now being graduated. I call them robo-docs. They just basically make a diagnosis if they can, and then they prescribe a protocol. And the protocols are designed by the drug companies rather than medical profession and medical science. The capture of our leaders has been a phenomenal exercise in successful marketing, and the greatest benefit to the management of this so-called pandemic has been the hundreds of billions of dollars profit made by Big Pharma.
Hmm. Yeah, the power behind it is unbelievable.
It is. It's the power of the institutions that have been bought by Big Pharma and the billionaires who are making even more money out of these exercises. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Bill Gates boasted that he put $10 billion investment into vaccines and he made a $200 billion profit.
Mm.
That's a 20-to-1 gain, and he very happily boasted this, and it's recorded on video, and this boast at the expense of the health of the globe. And I talk about health and well-being, not only in terms of people's physical health, but their mental health, their financial health, and the overall spirit of our society and our culture has been, to a large extent, destroyed by these people who belong to the institutions at the highest level of so-called healthcare in the world, and that's the World Health Organization, badly influenced by the World Economic Forum, and also severely driven by the US National Institutes of Allergy and Immunology. And are the puppets who have manipulated governments into believing that we have a killer disease in the coronavirus, or SARS-CoV-2, and therein everybody needs to be injected with this GMO. Mm. And as a consequence, we are now witnessing people who either die or cannot work, cannot get out of bed. We've got chronic and severe diseases that are emerging every day, and there are no answers to these adverse reactions within the science of medical science. The medical profession don't have the answers to help these people, simply because the damage being done is ongoing as a result of this genetic engineering.
And virtually no mention of myocarditis on the mainstream news.
No. Mainstream news has failed us. The ABC has failed us. At the beginning of the pandemic, we could have finished off this virus within 6 to 8 weeks if they'd taken advice from nutritional immunologists. But let me say that Wikipedia has a section called nutritional immunology, but it's to do with autoimmune diseases. There is no mention. In fact, I believe that the nutritional immunology section dealing with infection and infectious disease was removed from the Wikipedia definition because it's too dangerous to recommend vitamin D for everybody and avoid infection with the use of proper doses of vitamin D when there are far more profitable substances around, such as antivirals and the long and delayed wait for a so-called vaccine. There's very little real prevention in medicine and medical care and so-called modern healthcare. It's all about the business of healthcare being maintained, and the business of healthcare is allowing people to get illness and disease and treating the illness and disease. And Anthony, the government ignored me, the Prime Minister ignored me, the Health Minister ignored me, the Chief Medical Officer ignored me, the AMA ignored me, the RACGP, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, ignored me, the College of Intensive Care Specialists ignored me. They do so at their own peril in the long run, I believe. They prefer to listen to the advice from Big Pharma rather than from the advice of clinicians who have trained and are qualified and experienced in the simple use of substances like vitamin D for prevention, zinc to stop the replication of viruses, and vitamin C to be used for cases that do progress to serious illness. The use of intravenous vitamin C has been done for many, many decades in terms of boosting the immune system, killing bacteria and viruses, and high-dose intravenous vitamin C does have some anti-cancer effects. And it's certainly very, very effective in quelling the cytokine storm in seriously ill patients, as well as very effective in sepsis. But they will not use it in intensive care because they prefer to look at their protocols rather than just simply treat the patient with the best science that's available.
Mm. Based on the negativity you've encountered, you would have been excused for not coming out of retirement.
Couldn't stay in retirement, Anthony. One does have a conscience.
Mm.
When you know that patients are dying on ventilators, and they should never have been put on ventilators, patients are dying from drugs like remdesivir, which they should never have been given, because remdesivir suppresses the immune system, it suppresses the kidney function, and it can kill you. But in terms of correcting any deficiencies, such as a vitamin C or a vitamin D or a zinc deficiency or any other nutrient deficiency, it doesn't enter the equation with these doctors who are basically trained to think and act in terms of disease and prescription of a drug. So people are getting viruses unnecessarily, getting sick from the viruses, and they're ending up in hospital and dying. Because my profession prefers to think and only in terms of prescribing a drug, and they have no training or understanding. In fact, it's willful blindness that they continue to ignore the best science And that's the science of prevention and the science of health optimization of the population. Now, my profession has been captured by Big Pharma. It is beholden to Big Pharma. Big Pharma pays for their research, their jobs. Big Pharma is building factories all around the world to produce more mRNA that may have some very minor benefit. It's never been shown to be effective in any disease whatsoever. So why in God's name have they developed it for the use as a so-called vaccine? And by the way, when they came out with the genetically based substances called mRNA, there was never any other vaccine like it. So they redefined what a vaccine is to include it as a include the mRNA molecules as a vaccine.
And the bigger issue that we've got at the moment is that we're looking down the barrel of this connection to the WHO, and they can just now tell us what we need to do medically throughout the world.
Well, the WHO has been a failed organisation. It is captured also by the big money. The majority of the funding for the WHO, the World Health Organization, comes from the Chinese Communist Party, or Chinese, and from billionaires like Gates and others. And Gates is not a doctor. Gates has a domineering effect on nearly everybody, because people who make billions are regarded as very clever, smart people, very powerful people, and people that we must listen to. But Gates has boasted again on TED Talks that to reduce the world's population, we must vaccinate. Vaccines are going to be very useful, he said, in reducing the world's population. Mm. He said that some time ago.
Yeah, I saw that. And you were talking about all his donations. Well, through the Gavi Alliance, the money just goes back into his pocket anyway.
It does. It goes back into his pocket. He is, I think, one of the most dangerous persons on the face of this planet, along with Anthony Fauci. I mean, it's not me saying that. It's many others, including institutions, medical institutions as well, talking about these people. And if this can be proven to be a crime, it will be a crime to the entire human race. It'll be a crime of the most serious that's ever been committed. It's not genocide, it is democide. Genocide, according to the experts, genocide is the deliberate killing of certain races or certain groups of individuals, as we witnessed with the Nazis in the Second World War, exterminating the Jewish population, as well as gypsies and the handicapped. Now, that's genocide. But democide is when you actually try to eliminate a large percentage of the human race. And that's what's happening, whether people are dying immediately or whether people have got myocarditis or neurological disorders or autoimmune disorders. They're going to have serious health problems in the immediate and intermediate future. And as a consequence of these serious health problems, if they're not looked after from a real health perspective or a well-being perspective, they are going to succumb to the disease, be on drugs, and have a premature death or a sudden death. We now know that 1 in 35 with myocarditis from these shots. If you've had myocarditis, it is a serious condition. You have acute inflammation in the heart, and because of the persistence of the genetic substances injected and the production of large quantities of a synthetic protein, or the spike protein, produced by these vaccines, you're at risk of chronic inflammation and autoimmune disease, not only in the heart, but in virtually every other system in the body, because autoimmune diseases are not limited to one organ alone. They affect the entire system, all tissues and organs in the body. So these people who have been vaccinated and are unwell, if they are not helped through a more natural approach, I could say, with diet and the right use of supplements, right, correct use of natural anti-inflammatory agents, natural agents to help detox these spike proteins out of the system, and also the lipid nanoparticle. The lipid nanoparticle is a little sphere that carries the messenger RNA into the system. Then a lack of detox means that the progression of whatever illness or disease they've got is going to continue. Let me say, Anthony, there's no such thing as a, mild myocarditis, and it's not self-limiting. These doctors who state that it's mild myocarditis and people get better are talking through the tops of their heads. They are just not understanding the biology of these processes. When I say the biology, if they are not trained and experienced and qualified in nutritional immunology and nutritional medicine, and only normal, ordinary doctors or cardiologists or immunologists, they are speaking incorrectly. And this sort of thing, to me, if you are incorrect when you make a statement as a professional and you know it, or you know that you are deficient in this experience and training in nutritional immunology, for example, this is quackery. And the people who are doing this are charlatans by the strict definition. When I don't know something, I'll say, I don't know it. And I'll say, I'm not a cardiologist. I do not know the degree of cardiology that cardiologists know. So I will not say anything about the heart that I don't know. But I can very, very highly qualified person to say that I do know about the nutrients in the heart and the rest of the system and how they operate and how vaccines can interfere and drugs can interfere with nutrients and nutritional processes in every organ and tissue in the body. So I'm qualified to say that. And so what I'm saying is, no matter what tissue is being affected by a toxin or an adverse effect of a drug or an immunological agent, I can tell you quite categorically what happens at a molecular level with regard to the nutrients that are present in your heart and your brain and other tissues that are important in the protection of your heart, brain, and other tissues, and how they operate and what they do. And when you have been vaccinated, so-called, with this gene therapy, we don't know all of the interactions that the spike protein and lipid nanoparticles and all of the other bits and pieces, including DNA, that are in these vaccines and what they're doing from a pathological perspective. But I can say it's certainly putting a major stress on our detoxification systems and on the operation of the tissues, whether it be cardiac muscle, brain cells, or white blood cells in the immune system.
The myocarditis is a term that we've really never heard of before this in the last couple of years, like as a lay person.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the lay public have learned a lot. Some good, but most of it's not good, because the mass formation, the collective hypnotic effect of these clever marketers, and let me say that the marketers within the drug companies, and particularly the vaccine companies, are the best in the world, and they know how to spin the lies to make it look like the truth. We've basically been brainwashed to a large extent by the media.
Over a long period of time, like a slow creep.
A slow creep. It's they call it the clever marketers and the spin doctors in the industry call it nudging, slowly nudging us to believe that the best of healthcare is within the medical profession. And, of course, as I said before, medicos have been brainwashed. And I witnessed that when I was training. I was a mature age student, well, the age of 24, when I entered medicine. I was the old man of the school because everybody else was around about 17 and just coming out of school. After 6 years primary school, 6 years in secondary school, and straight into university, most of these young people had never seen anything else but a classroom and a teacher and perhaps a holiday every now and again, and no worldly experience and no experience in any other endeavour in life, really. I was very fortunate, and I say now privileged, to have been able to see things in a different light when I was training. But the brainwashing of medical students starts right from the beginning. They conform. They don't ask the difficult questions, and if you do, you put down. So you conform, and there was one thing that changed my whole attitude to medicine after I'd done the preclinical years. I loved the science in the clinical years, and sat standing around a bed in the hospital ward with my fellow students and the professor of medicine. There was a little old lady lying in the bed. She'd just been operated on for cancer. She was given intravenous salts and sugars and ice cream and jelly for her dinner. And I said, why are we not addressing her nutritional status? I asked about her diet. And the professor said, we're not concerned about her nutritional status. We're here to treat the cancer. And I thought, now, if that was a sick animal worth thousands of dollars and productive, it would be getting far better treatment than this lady lying in the bed in hospital. So I said to myself, I'll never be a doctor like you, and I'll do something a little different. And my colleagues still remember that occasion. That was over 43 years ago now. And I still have dinner with one of my colleagues who remembers it quite clearly. So that's when I decided I was going to change my attitude towards how I was going to approach medicine. It was a very frustrating time, very difficult time for me, and I didn't know what I was going to do at the end of my training, but it was not too long after I started practicing and seeing what happened in mainstream medicine that I decided to give it up and start something else. That's when I started the college, or became, you know, initiated the program in the College of Nutritional Medicine. So the brainwashing is very intense.
Been going on for a long time.
Yep.
Just things like the slip, slop, slap program.
Yes. Oh, well, that's money making.
Keep us out of the sun, but we really need it.
Yeah. We really need it. Everything in moderation, Anthony. I mean, you go into the sun, you should not get burnt. You should be wearing proper clothing and staying in the shade. That's what sensible people do. Or wear a large brimmed hat if you're out in the sun. But putting chemicals on your skin and filtering out UVB, ultraviolet light, that's important in the production of not just vitamin D, but other molecules respond to sunlight in the skin and are important in our energy processes and the production of anti-cancer factors. I mean, even just vitamin D itself is an anti-cancer factor. So if you're not letting the skin receive the light from the sun and converting the cholesterol in the skin to vitamin D, you're actually putting yourself at greater risk.
Mm.
And also there's some evidence that these chemicals you're putting on your skin become carcinogenic. So it's a fallacy to think that we can beat nature. We only command nature by obeying her. And we are reaping the seeds that we've sown with regard to abusing natural processes.
What motivated you to go into medicine as a young lad?
I wanted to help people. I was very interested in the science and very interested initially in going into medicine and doing my best and studying my hardest. In the first 3 years, I got high distinctions in nearly every subject there was, in fact. There was only one that I didn't get a high distinction in, I think. Can't remember exactly. But then I went into clinical work, and it was I didn't like it. I just didn't understand some of the concepts of, you know, collecting a whole lot of signs and symptoms and calling it a syndrome and then treating that syndrome with a drug and not getting to the root cause of the problem. That really frustrated me. Mm. I mean, I can give you hundreds of examples. I'll give you one example. There's a grand round, which means, you know, everybody, all the doctors involved in the hospital and system in particular units, get together and do a grand round about patients. And there's a grand round about a young woman who had ulcerative colitis. And this young woman had a number of operations for her ulcerative colitis where the bowel gets ulcerated, the large bowel starts bleeding and getting ulcers, and it can be catastrophic. And during the grand round, there was no mention about what was being put in her mouth and going into the bowel. There was no mention about her diet or her nutritional status. There was talk about how much bowel needed to be removed, how much cortisone she should be given, and the amount of immunosuppressive drugs that should be used. This woman was sick from poisons. Not only the the poisons from the bell and the breakdown of the bell wall and the loss of blood, the toxicity from the drugs. There was no discussion about these aspects of her health. And then it came to the psychological and psychiatric problem that the woman had. And of course, if you've got these serious physical problems, you're going to have psychological symptoms of depression and anxiety and fear, terrible things. And one of the suggestions was, why don't we get her just to draw what she looks like inside and see if we can derive any understanding about her psychological and her perceptive qualities about herself. I thought, God almighty, we're looking at a woman who's got nutritional problems and deficiencies, obvious deficiencies, and not even considering correcting. And I thought, this is bizarre, absolutely bizarre. Because, I had a bit of an understanding, and this was during my training, I had a bit of an understanding about ulcers and bleeding and hemorrhaging. I had understanding about how important zinc is in the immune system. There was no discussion about zinc. There was no discussion about replacing iron and selenium and other trace elements in her system. There was no thought, really, although they were giving her some high protein infusions and so on, but there was absolutely nothing about what was going into her mouth that could have been aggravating it. And we know that there are certain foods that are toxic to the large bowel in some people. And that includes dairy products or highly processed dairy products. Dairy products that are pasteurized and homogenized are even more toxic. Wheat and wheat products. Wheat contains toxins. Gluten can become a toxin, and it's broken down to glutenin. And it is highly, highly toxic in people who've got a genetic predisposition to it. These things are not stopped in the diet. So you're just pouring more aggravating factors into a sick and damaged system. I thought, I just used to go home scratching my head. These poor patients are not being helped. They're not getting better, and many of them are dying. I could not stay in that system. My conscience said, I can't do this any longer. And I'm not exaggerating. The last 3 years of my training were extremely, extremely frustrating. And then going into practical medicine, I loved, the wonderful things that we can do in medicine, like anesthetics, pain relief, and surgery, especially for trauma. And I think that's where medicine is outstanding, and it excels nearly every other endeavor that humans have. When you can put somebody to sleep, fix up a fractured leg, or drain the blood out of a brain that's caused by some concussion or some injury, this is medicine at its absolute best. But that's a very small percentage of it. The rest of it, the prescribing of antibiotics, for example, for viral infections, and justifying it by saying it's stopping a secondary bacterial infection, is counterpact to negligence and dangerous. And I think we're starting to realize that the overuse of antibiotics and the production of superbugs has been one of the catastrophes of modern medicine. But an even greater catastrophe is the vaccination programs that we've adopted. So I think I've gone off the track a little bit there, Anthony.
No, you haven't. I was just going to say, so what you're saying is through a careful, proper diet, you could possibly avoid surgery.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are many, many patients who've had brain cancer patients really before surgery and radiotherapy. For brain cancers, patients should be made healthy, like all cancer patients should be made healthy before you consider cut, burn, and poison therapy, that is surgery, radiotherapy, and chemotherapy, to see whether or not you can make the patient healthy enough to slow down the cancer. And if you can't, then that's when orthodox medicine plays its exceedingly active and role. But I've had two patients with severe brain cancers who've been operated on three or four times, two or three times, had radiotherapy, and there's nothing more that the oncologists can do, and these patients are given 2 weeks, 2 months to live or so on whatever prognosis they've got. And these are stage four cancers in the brain. And they've come along, and we've changed their diet. We've given them a holistic approach to maintaining their health, including massage and general exercise. And high-dose intravenous vitamin C is one of the best things for these patients, as well as other intravenous nutrients. And there are things like injections of mistletoe that are used widely in Germany and France and Austria, some other parts of the world. The use of vitamin B17, which is the apricot kernel extract, or also known as amygdalin. These substances do have a positive effect on the biochemistry of the brain. And patients who've had conditions like this end up with a cancer that's still in the brain but hasn't enlarged or it hasn't spread. And therein lies a life saved, because cancers kill when they spread. If they can be walled off and contained, they can't do any more damage. And so, for example, a patient of mine who had paralysis down the left-hand side and was found it very difficult to speak, had aphasia or dysphagia, came to me, and I thought, we're not going to be able to do very much with this gentleman, but we'll try our best, and we did. And I thought, I hadn't seen him for 3 months, and I got a call from him, and he was in Perth. He said, "Hi, Doc, how are you doing?" I said, "Well, you sound so much better," because he was unable to speak properly. He said, "Yeah." I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm in Perth now, and I was up late last night dancing," and I was shocked. Anyway, for many, many years after we treated him and he got over his tumour, it was still in his brain. He would go along to the oncologists and they would do the scans every year, and they'd see the brain cancer there, and it hadn't spread, hadn't got any larger, and Bill was still alive and functioning. They didn't know what had happened, but it was a spontaneous, or what I call natural remission. Did they ask what he did, or were they interested in what he did? No, not at all. And this is bewildering, because there's this lack of enthusiastic endeavor and inquisitiveness.
Yeah, that's a great word.
Yeah.
I imagine from the hospital's perspective, there's no money in that kind of treatment.
No, there's not. It's very, very cheap, and you've got a healthy patient, and the industry doesn't like healthy people. Mm. The industry likes an unhealthy population, and they've been very successful in doing that, because they've been injecting our children with vaccines that don't work for decades now.
The schedule of that just gets worse and worse.
Well, and the government says we've got to have it, because the medical profession says if we don't, we're going to have these killer diseases like measles and mumps and chickenpox. Well, God help me, these childhood illnesses, if the children are healthy, they almost come asymptomatic, very, very mild. And mothers and grandmothers in the past knew how to deal with these childhood illnesses. And when I was training, we were told that we have these illnesses because they're part of our evolution, and they actually prime our immune system, and that's exactly what they do. But it's like with this vaccine where we inject it into the muscle, that induces antibodies called IgG and IgM. And they are the two major antibodies that, once a virus or bacteria gets into our system, binds onto those viruses and bacteria and by white blood cells, and then take them to other white blood cells that kill the bacteria and the viruses. But if you can stop the virus or bacteria going into your system in the first place, then you don't have to have high levels of IgG and IgM. And if you've got the antibodies at the mucosa, the lining of your nose and your mouth and your lungs and your gut, if you've got the antibodies there called IgA, then the IgA stops bacteria and the viruses, neutralizes, and they go into the system, and the IgM and IgG mop it up and deal with it properly. So if you don't have the IgA in your mucus, then the viruses go into your system. There's measles, mumps, or chickenpox around the place, and you don't get measles, mumps, and chickenpox, But what happens is that the immune system cannot read these wild viruses properly and react in a way that's dangerous to the system. And in most people, there are reactions that are abnormal, and those who are genetically susceptible to various conditions, they end up with other diseases that can be killer diseases as well. So the vaccination programs without IgA produce individuals who are susceptible to developing asthma, hay fever, eczema, serious eczema, autoimmune diseases, childhood leukemias, type 1 diabetes in children, epileptic fits, and many other conditions, including autoimmune diseases. So this is why the inoculated populations are far less healthier than populations of children who've not been vaccinated. The only real vaccines that work are those that induce an entire and natural immune response. And one of them is smallpox. Smallpox affects people by infecting the skin, and that's the point of entry with most smallpox conditions. And we, of course, inoculate the skin with the smallpox, or we did with the attenuated smallpox virus in the earlier days, the cowpox virus. So it's skin entry and skin induced. The other one is polio. Polio gets in through the gut. So the oral polio vaccine is a vaccine that I accept as something that does it more naturally. But every other one, most of the measles, mumps that we're talking about and other childhood illnesses enter through the nose and the respiratory system. And when we inject into the skin and muscle, we miss out producing the protective IgA.
Mm.
Therein lies a cause of a diseased and sick population. That's what we see.
And the other thing with the childhood vaccines is the triples, quadruples at the same time. We don't know what that's doing, do we?
No, nature never did that. Nature would never do anything like that. Give us even two viruses at one time. Very, very rare. They probably are around most of the time, but we're able to fight them off because of viral loads and other conditions. But delivering three, four, five different antigens and expecting the immune system to be able to handle them all at once, especially when these vaccines use what we call, we call the agents to induce better immunity. They are, let's say, fortifying agents that are put into the vaccines. So it's, again, so far away from nature. Nature doesn't use fortifying agents or adjuvants, as we scientifically call them, in inducing more profound immune reactions. And profound immune reactions to a foreign antigen that's been altered by mankind. As I said before, we command nature only by obeying her. And we're disobeying her seriously. And this industry needs to be brought to its knees because it's doing more damage than good worldwide. There are other ways that have been proven to be effective in preventing the adverse effects of diseases. Vitamin C was used for polio back in the 50s by my colleagues in the US. Vitamin A in high doses in protecting children against the complications of measles, a single dose during an epidemic. But these studies are subsumed under the interests of Big Pharma and its profiteering.
Well, it sounds like it would be a monumental task to bring them to their knees. Do you think that it can be done?
Look, I hope the world wakes up to what's been happening. I think it's going to be generational, Anthony. I don't think this generation have got the ability to get out of their comfort zones and start thinking, okay, we've been doing the wrong thing, we need to change. I don't see that happening. You need almost, well, it's been quoted to be about 3.5% of the population to 5% of the population to actually achieve a change as serious as this. I really don't think there's enough people, there's certainly not enough people at the moment who are awake to what's going on. Younger people, maybe, but again, by the time they've got a pecuniary interest or a lifetime interest or an asset in the current system, will they change? So it's got to be before they leave school, I think, before we can see change. And unfortunately, the teachers are just as bad as the rest of the population. In fact, the teachers in the state schools have been brainwashed as well. And what's going on with teaching now is shameful. And we're seeing the results of that in schools. The problem we've got in schools now with behaviour, vaping, students not wanting to study. I mean, talking more about state schools rather than private schools.
Well, you mentioned earlier the curiosity. It just seems like no one's got any anymore.
No, I mean, it's basically we accept what we're being told. And as long as we can tick the boxes, we pass the exams, we get our degree, and off we go. I mean, I've examined doctors who've graduated in medicine, had years of experience, and we train them up in nutritional medicine. Their grammar is terrible. Their spelling is terrible. And their ability to communicate is terrible. I'm not talking about all doctors. I'm talking about the majority who are locked up in their clinics and behaving like robo-docs. The best thing about going to a doctor is not necessarily the treatment or the diagnosis. Diagnosis is important. But the fact that if you've got a self-limiting condition, you go to see the doctor, you feel good, and the doctor's brilliant because the condition is self-limiting. But if you've got a serious condition, you go and see the doctor, a lot of the time you're going to end up going to see a specialist, and the specialist knows even less than the general practitioner and the general physician about what good health is. The specialist will only look at your eye or your heart or your liver or your kidney and treat that. They will not look at you from a lifestyle perspective. They'll not look at you some of the most important aspects of improving your health, and that is mind-body medicine, a bit of gentle physical medicine, exercise, and correcting your diet and taking foods out of your system that are you're reacting to sensitively in a sensitive way or an allergic way. Basically, it's tick the boxes, follow the protocols, and you're a good doctor, and you won't get into trouble with APRA or the medical boards.
Yeah, that's
the problem. But if you dare, yeah, that's a major problem because the medical boards are made up of the same characters as is APRA, the regulator. And the regulator needs, I mean, we don't need a regulator that we have in medicine to look after the population. They've done more damage, in my opinion, than good. And in fact, punishing doctors for giving informed consent or writing an exemption from the vaccine or prescribing ivermectin by...
Well, you almost wouldn't want to be a doctor anymore if that's the case.
Well, that's right. I would. In the system at the moment, the current system at the moment, you're a very dangerous person if you are practicing what you're expected to practice. And a large number of people who can't get in to see a doctor now are looking elsewhere for help. And that elsewhere is looking at the natural approaches to healthcare and taking more responsibility for health and learning more. The interest now in many of in the general population about what can we do to prevent infection in the future rather than having vaccines is enormous. Let me say, Anthony, I came out with a press release at the beginning of the pandemic. It was called the CD Zinc campaign. I sent it everywhere. I sent it to the Prime Minister, the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, Chief Medical Officers, AMA, all those people I mentioned before and organisations I mentioned before, as well as to a lot of my friends and colleagues in the in medicine. And it went reasonably viral. And I wondered what was the result of it, whether I could take any credit or not. I don't take any credit, but I think Australians who are reasonably well-educated and have some idea about what we're talking about, but they're not fully awake, went out and bought their vitamin D and their vitamin C and their zinc and perhaps other things as well to support their immune system. And in the first quarter of 2020, I contacted the head of the Complementary Medicines Association, Carl Gibson, at the time, and I said, what's happening with some of the nutrients? Is there any change in usage? And he said, well, he believed that from the figures in the industry that vitamin D sales had tripled in the first quarter of 2020. And I said to myself, well, not all Australians are as dumb as some have made out them to to be. The Australians are a smart lot, despite the fact that they've been brainwashed.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that from a worldwide point of view, what's currently happening is so outlandish and so confusing that people just don't know what to do.
Yeah, they don't, and that's why we set up the WOW, the World of Wellness. So, you know, do some more educating, and I've started a Substack to help inform people as well. But we've got a lot of informational material on the World of Wellness website. We've got information and material from all around the world and various protocols that people can follow and videos and comments and so on. So,
do you have doctors connected to the World of Wellness?
Yes. Once people become members, they can actually go into the back part of the website and find practitioners all over the country.
We need
more practitioners to be able to treat the acute and severe cases, like the COVID patients who are still getting COVID now, patients who have been vaccinated. Those who were not vaccinated and who've had COVID have got natural immunity, which is profound and long-lasting immunity to COVID. So they should be able to fight future variants very, very well, providing they look after their health. But the ones who are getting COVID now, some of them are getting very sick because their immune systems have been suppressed by 3, 4, or 5 vaccines. And every time you have a vaccine, it damages your immune system. It might stimulate you to produce more spike protein. The more spike protein you've got in the system, the more damage you're doing to all of your blood vessels. Then you're going to end up with clots, heart attacks, and so on. So we need more people to give high-dose intravenous vitamin C to these people, and that will prevent them from having to go to hospital. Because once you're in hospital, you won't get the high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And if you don't get the high-dose intravenous vitamin C, your disease will more than likely progress.
Hmm.
We did a study in 2021, 2022. It was published in a journal called Cereus, CERUS. The lead author was Karen Reed, R-I-E-D. The study was conducted in 7 different university hospital settings in Turkey. We couldn't do it here in Australia, but it was an Australian registered study, so it was a properly designed and conducted study. We showed that quite clearly, you do not go into hospital with COVID if your vitamin D is above 75 nanomoles per litre. Well, I prefer it to be above 125 to 150. But if you are deficient, if you have insufficient levels of vitamin D below 70 or 75, then you're more than likely going to get sick, and you're more than likely likely to end up in hospital. If you've got insufficient levels below 30, you're going to be very sick, and if you're below 10, you're probably going to die. The other thing we showed, not only is vitamin D highly protective against the severity of the disease, but vitamin C intravenously, if you are in intensive care, will get you out of intensive care faster. My experience with patients in intensive care and on full life support called ECMO, or extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, where the blood is taken out of your system and oxygenated and cleaned and pumped back in, and you're unconscious and you breathe by a ventilator. When you're on ECMO, that's full life support. There is a risk, of course, of passing on. High-dose intravenous vitamin C can get some of the most sickest of individuals off the ventilators, but it's not used because robo-docs only follow the protocols. They don't think about the patient, and there's no inquisitiveness. And in fact, intensive care specialists in Australia and New Zealand refuse to give high-dose intravenous vitamin C, despite the fact that they know it is actually one of the most effective agents that can be used in sepsis. And sepsis, of course, is something that can kill a patient very quickly.
Mm, interesting. Now, the people listening, going back to what I said earlier about what's going on around the world, they would say, why would any governing body do this to me? Why would my government do this to me when they know that there's safer alternatives?
Because the government is asleep as well. The government takes advice from the medical profession. I hold the leaders of my profession in both clinical medicine and scientific medicine in almost utter contempt. I do. I mean, listening to them on television and on the radio talking about this so-called killer virus when it wasn't a killer virus, and the need to lock everybody up and the need for vaccines and destroying the economy, I hold them in utter contempt.
Yeah, well, they were doing the bidding of the government.
They're doing the bidding of the government, and they're doing also the bidding of the of Big Pharma, because most of them are conflicted one way or another. Their jobs are dependent on what they say, including on television, the doctors on television, the journalists. I mean, they're all conflicted because the media were instructed by the World Health Organization via the British Broadcasting Commission, who instructed media all around the world. This is the narrative coming from the World Health Organization, and it was titled the Trusted Media Initiative, TMI. The Trusted Media Initiative was that the media around the world need to be trusted during this pandemic to deliver the correct narrative. Well, it was a narrative about how dangerous the virus was, how important and life-saving the vaccines were going to be. Well, we know that the media lied and continues to lie about the safety and efficacy of the vaccines. Even last night, Anthony, there was a committee of inquiry in Canberra in the Senate where senators were asking questions of both Moderna, Pfizer and the TGA and the performance of the representatives from the companies Moderna and Pfizer were shameful. They were pathetic. And hopefully the recordings are made public of these this inquiry last night, because they could not answer simple questions like how many or how much or reduction of transmission. It was embarrassing, and it reminded me of the witnesses in the Nuremberg trial. I'll say no more.
You posted on your Substack like a meme, without courage, there cannot be truth. And there's more to that post, but these doctors...
Without truth, there is no other virtue.
Yeah.
You can practice no other virtue without the truth.
And so these doctors, they had no courage. And imagine if they did. Imagine if the doctors of the world stood up and said, no, this isn't right. Would have been over in a day.
Well, it would have been over very, very quickly, my friend. I mean, we calculated, I calculated, and I had agreement with other colleagues in the UK in particular, that it could have been finished in 6 to 8 weeks. If everybody had been given a shot of vitamin D, if blood levels of vitamin D measured, everybody would have been walking around catching COVID, and some would have had a cold, and the majority would have had nothing. Asymptomatic, that's what nothing means. Very few would have got a mild flu, and even fewer would have got a more severe flu-like illness. But we knew that we could treat these early symptoms with things that are readily available and cheap, but they were banned. They were banned by our authorities because the drug companies said, we don't want any competition to the vaccines. If there's competition to the vaccines, we will not make them. That's the deal they did with our government. And they refused last night in inquiry to release those that information to the senators. And I think when a private company or even a public company refuses to provide our government with information as to the deals that the government did secretively with these drug companies, you have to ask the question, what's going on?
Yeah, when you know,
Sweden allowed the virus to run rampant. It infected the majority of the population. The population got natural immunity, and very few deaths in Sweden. The only problem in Sweden is they didn't isolate the elderly enough so that they had a significant death rate in those elderly people in homes. But again, going into those homes and giving those patients a decent dose of vitamin D, again, that's highly protective. And we knew that vitamin D was protective before this pandemic, before other pandemics. We've known it for decades that vitamin D and sunlight in particular can protect us against these viruses.
Well, when you see the Senate voting no to investigate excess deaths, you know, you've got to ask yourself what's their motivation.
I think a lot of these people will be thinking, if we do an investigation, And it's shown that the vaccines have been causing these excess deaths. And we are the government, and I'm a member of the government. I'm going to be in a lot of trouble in my electorate. So these people are just thinking about themselves.
Mm. So they get voted back in.
Well, so they can go back to their homes and live with a clear conscience.
Mm.
But they're not going to. I mean, there's only a handful of politicians. Politicians last night on inquiry included Pauline Hanson. She asked some very pertinent questions. Alex Antic, Rennick, and who else was on there? Oh, Malcolm Roberts. And he's always very good. I mean, Gerard Rennick probably was the most penetrating in terms of questions. Pauline Hanson was accurately accusing these people of doing the wrong thing, as one would expect from Pauline. They all were very, very in-depth and penetrating questions, but it was shameful, the answers and responses we were getting. That these people were defending themselves, essentially. And one of the presenters at the beginning of the Moderna inquest was that she was praising how the vaccines were so safe and effective and how many lives it had saved. Well, how many lives has it destroyed compared to how many lives has it saved? I don't think their modelling and their figures and their statistics in terms of saving lives is accurate. I think it's exaggerated. And if people were going to die from the virus, they were going to be elderly, and the very elderly, and those with serious comorbidities, more than 2.5 serious diseases per patient.
Mm. I did a podcast recently with Judy Weilerman.
Oh,
and
yes.
She said, I love Ian's surname, Bright Hope. And, you know, do we have hope? Do we have Bright Hope? And what can we do?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, keep going on with your podcasts, Anthony, and keep educating as many people as possible. Reveal as much of the truth as you possibly can, because to get to the truth, it's an ongoing endeavor. We can never get to the complete truth about anything, but we certainly know what is false. And as I said before, without courage, we don't have freedom. And without freedom, we don't have the truth. Without truth, we cannot have any other real virtues. So we've got to be continuing to fight for our freedom so that we can express ourselves clearly. And also, we should have had a debate about the management of this pandemic from the beginning. The debates are going to start, and the debates, I think, will go on for a very, very long time. And while we can damage the bill that Anthony Albanese is putting up, the disinformation, misinformation bill, where there'll be possibly only one arbiter as to what is allowed to be said or when and stated. Well, all of the things that I've been saying could be regarded as disinformation, misinformation by my adversaries, and certainly my adversaries in the most powerful position in this country, because they are supporting the current status quo of vaccines only. And so therein lies a problem with our freedom of speech into the future, because everything I've said could be regarded as misinformation or disinformation. And it's not. I'm talking from experience, science, from qualifications, I believe being closer to the truth than my adversaries. My arch adversaries have been doctors who've said you can only treat with the way we're talking about. You can only treat disease with drugs and chemotherapy and surgery and radiotherapy. And it's rubbish. It's nonsense.
Mm.
So we've got to defeat this bill that Anthony Albanese is putting up. And I put up a Substack to that effect as well, that he is a risk to our democracy, because doctors have not been free to speak in the last 3 years. They can't give informed consent. They can't talk about the alternative treatments that were available from the beginning, the prevention with CD and zinc, and the early treatments with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So we need to keep fighting for the freedom of speech, and that requires courage. Mm. And there are courageous doctors out there who are trying to do their best. And I see a great opportunity now to to make some significant changes, but we've got to get 3.5 to 5% of the population on our side and active to convince the government that they've done the wrong thing. And think of it was close to 50-50 at that Senate vote whereby they were going to have an inquiry. I think what happened last night may tip a few more across the line. There's got to be an inquiry. I think what came out of last night is enough to shouldn't be enough to stimulate a royal commission. But I think the current politicians and the previous 3 years of politicians, especially those in the Morrison government who ignored me, will be getting worried if there is a royal commission, because we know about robo-debt. That's going to pale into insignificance. It's only 500,000 people in robo-debt who are badly damaged. We've got 5 million people who are badly damaged with this vaccine, at least. And with the evidence that vaccines cause the spike protein breaks down and forms things called exosomes. These exosomes come out of the skin, they come out of the lungs, and they can adversely affect other members of the population who have either been vaccinated or unvaccinated. And the unvaccinated who get too close to a vaccinated person can suffer from exosomal damage. And this is not widely known. But if you go into a room full of vaccinated people and somebody's coughing and they're breathing heavily, you end up can be ingesting these exosomes, which are parts of the RNA and some of the DNA and lipid nanoparticles. It's waste product from the vaccines coming out of people's lungs. It can make you feel very sick, and that's a fact. So we have a ticking time bomb in our civilization, and I hope that, and I do have a bright hope, that there is an awakening to what's going on, that there is a realization that we can do something. We need research. We need funding for research. We need resources. We need training of people. That's what we're doing at the WOW, retraining nurses and doctors to look after the people who've been damaged. And whether or not there is an effect long-term on our fertility and on the human genome, and whether or not the human genome has been changed permanently by these vaccines and the gene material in the vaccines going into our own genes. We know that that happens, but is that going to have a generational effect or not? We just don't know. But we've taken a huge risk, a massive risk, and again, conducted by, I have to say, conducted by some of the most evil activities that have ever existed in humankind. Far, far worse than the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
That's pretty big.
It's big.
But while you courageously speak out, are you afraid for your life?
Not really, Anthony. I have a lot of faith and believe in natural justice. What I'm saying may be offensive to many. It may hurt many. There are people who say we should not be forgiving of the damage that's been done. But I think there have been a lot of lieutenants involved in this war, the war against humanity, who are fully unaware of what they've been doing. They've been led, and their minds have been influenced by the evilest of forces, and that they're coming from the institutions that we have trusted and put too much trust in. And I say that because I'm pointing the finger at the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization and the greed of many who've seen the opportunity to make not only a lot of money, but gain more power and influence and want to make a mark on humanity by creating a one-world government. Because if you can frighten the entire human race into shutting down and taking a medicine, an experimental medicine, then you basically have control over them. And that control can apply to other pandemics and other risks. So I am extremely rationally fearful of what could happen. they, for example, decide to lock the whole world down because of climate change, for example, and you disagree with it, the penalties could be horrific. But I think, again, we have to educate and inform our people that there are evil forces within the globe, just as there were during the First World War, the Second World War, in Kampuchea, Cambodia, the Pol Pot regime. There are evil people, and they will never, ever go away. These evil people believe truly in themselves and what they're doing, but these are false beliefs. They're false beliefs for this time and place in human history. False beliefs are delusions. And many of the people who have been driving this, who've initiated this, are suffering from delusions, delusions of grandeur, some with delusions of persecution. And from that, we end up with the psychopathy, if you like. And for somebody like a leader, so-called leader, in the likes of Dr. Anthony Fauci, who says, I am the science, I know what is going on, when he clearly was committing a lie, clearly being hypocritical, and telling the world that we have to follow Anthony Fauci and his science, that is a serious delusion. That is an illness. It's a mental illness. It's part of a what we call schizophrenia, a denial of reality, delusions of grandeur. This is a serious problem. He was in his position for far too long. And it goes back to the days when he was prescribing AZT for his AIDS patients and they were dying from it. And we were taking patients off the AZT and giving them vitamin C, and they were living for years longer than they were expected to. So the lies that Fauci told to the Senate have been exposed now. And I think the fact that our media have written about it in The Australian last weekend.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's going to, the exposures are going to occur. So I think the media is going to be very fearful that they will be sued because they were complicit in all of this. Our national media, the ABC, were complicit in this horrific exercise in injecting people with a toxic substance. They lied to us. They told it when it was clear that these vaccines would not stop infection, would not stop transmissibility, that the material injected would stay at the site in the muscle. That was rubbish. It was nonsense. And that it was safe and that it would not incorporate into our DNA. All of this is, you know, nonsense. And they knew about it. But I was told this is the narrative. Everybody's got to have it because if everybody has it, we have herd immunity. Well, herd immunity never occurs from a vaccine.
No.
Herd immunity only occurs when the herd is infected naturally, and the majority of the herd is infected naturally. And that is a good thing because it keeps priming our immune systems.
How do people be directed to the World of Wellness?
Anthony, the World of Wellness is www.wowintl.com. The INTL is short for international. So wowintl.com.
And like with anything that's potentially coming up in the future, you need to join and be a member and pay, otherwise the information will be censored, so it has to be hidden behind a paywall.
Yeah, it's hidden behind a paywall. I mean, the information is accurate. The information is high quality, I believe. The people on our board who've been responsible and the internet provider, the designers, have done a very good job with the website. Because of its complexity, it has been a little slow. We're working on speeding it up. But there are referrals to doctors here. There are international protocols put up there. And we also talk about other things like psychiatric illness and cancer and the safe use of complementary medicines or natural medicines, diet. We also talk about some of the peripheral things, including 5G, poisons in the environment. We are not a political organization. We are primarily for educational purposes, research, and clinical assistance. We don't treat people, but we refer people and patients to the appropriate practitioners, whether they be doctors or qualified natural therapists and others who are awakened to what's going on. My 5 or 6 books are there. They can be downloaded as PDFs. One of the first books was a recipe book. Another book was on HIV/AIDS. And the protocols in the HIV/AIDS book, which is 40 years old now, are still applicable today in terms of detox and nutrition. There's a book on chronic fatigue, ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, called Fighting Fatigue. All those books are free and can be downloaded.
And by the looks of it, you're not in the health industry, you're in the wellness industry.
We're in the wellness industry. We're in the we're very optimistic. The WOW is for wellness and for future wellness. We believe in the wellness right across the board, you know, in terms of homes and housing and finance. And we're not involved in these things, but that's what we believe is wellness. And without our freedoms and without our peace, wellness will never occur. Complete wellness will never occur. So we also an organization that wants to achieve or wants to see peace achieved as best we possibly can, because without peace we can't have the freedoms that we need as well. So the world's in a very, very precarious situation at the moment. We have the answers to the problems, and those answers are not wars and depopulation and the use of toxic medicines. Nature is far more generous than that, far more caring and far more effective. I think we need to get back to nature and appreciate her and practice what she determines is important in our future as a race. And I think by educating people via podcasts like yourself and others, Anthony, we can achieve a lot of this, but it's going to, as I said before, probably be a generational thing. We're starting also with the youth of wellness, or the youth of WOW, bringing along young people to learn and to talk and speak to the people at our meetings. And we hope that we can align ourselves with many other organisations like the WOW, as we have with the World Council for Health in the UK, and its allies all around the world. So it's not just a local thing here in Australia. The movement is significantly large and getting larger, especially in countries that are not as wealthy as Australia, where people don't have to put their hands in their pockets, pay tax, and have that tax money stolen from them by Big Pharma. I say stolen because that's what I believe it was. The poorer countries, they used early treatments and prevention. Central American countries recommended lifestyle changes, going out, having some exercise, getting some sunshine, improving your diet. Mexico used ivermectin, as did Uttar Pradesh in India, and South Africa and Zimbabwe, and other countries where people who were very sick didn't have to wait until they get sick enough to go into hospital. They were treated early with ivermectin, which is incorrectly referred to as horse paste. Ivermectin is a human medicine. It's been used in tens of billions of doses for the prevention of river blindness and elephantitis in African countries. So it's an antiparasitic. It's very, very effective in early COVID and other viral infections as well. So there are countries around the world that perhaps don't have a lot of money to pay drug companies for expensive vaccines, but they're better off because the death rate in Uttar Pradesh and India, for example, are virtually zeroed when they started using it. Same in other countries where it was used. And also, I mean, ivermectin was imported into Australia by a lot of people and used, and I know how effective it is because one of my doctors gave it to me, and I basically got a very mild infection of COVID, just to make some pains, and the ivermectin was basically a one-day illness and really didn't affect me apart from forced me to rest for a day.
But the government banned it.
And the government banned it, yes. Well, I think the government is going to have to find some significant answers to very difficult questions as to why it was banned. But that's going to actually open up Pandora's box with regard to the deals that the government did with Moderna and Pfizer.
Yep.
Fancy being able to make a substance that population is to take when that substance can be manufactured without proving that it's safe.
It's amazing. From the start, I haven't been able to believe it.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to 1986 when the big deal was done by Big Pharma and the US government. And Big Pharma said, we will not manufacture vaccines if we're going to be sued. So they were given immunity from prosecution. So they can make an unsafe substance that the government can approve of it, and it can be given to the population. It's beyond anybody's imagination. Could Hollywood come up with anything better than that?
yeah. It is. It amazes me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. I think maybe we need to start just not watching the television. Turn it off.
Turn off the television. Stop believing the mainstream news 100% because it's not accurate. I think communicate with people who are well-educated, well-informed on social media. You've got to be careful of social media as well, of course. And I'm not a social media expert by any stretch of the imagination. But I do follow some of my colleagues who are well-informed. And we talk to one another. We even bring some of them out to Australia. McCulloch, Pierre Corey. We recently had Asim Malhotra come out here, the cardiologist from the UK.
I went to his talk in Adelaide.
Yeah. He stayed with me for 4 days and four nights.
Okay.
Yeah. We had some very interesting discussions about these vaccines and the damage to people's hearts that's been ignored by the cardiologists of this country. But it takes just one person to tell the truth to start breaking the ice down.
Mm.
But as soon as somebody tells the truth, of course, the naysayers will attack, and they attack not just the valuable information and the truth of the information, but they attack the individual. And that's a classical approach in politics, and it also occurs in the politics of medicine. If you find something that's different and it's outside the box and it works and it's better than what they've got, then they don't attack the science, they don't attack the facts, they don't have a debate about the reality. They basically start character assassination, persecution of the individual who's not appearing to be like the rest. And
how do you manage that attack, like from a personal point of view?
If it's me, I come back with the facts as I see them. That's why I've survived, I think, Anthony, because people have seen the results of what I and my colleagues on my side of the fence are doing. And it's going to get worse, I think. Orthodox medicine is going to try and protect itself as much as it possibly can to retain its credulity, but its credibility has suffered significantly since this pandemic, and so many doctors have seen what's happened, especially at GP level, and they've retired prematurely or they've just left the profession. And this is why it's so difficult now to have an appointment with a GP on the same day as you want the appointment.
Mm.
And this is part of Bill Gates' whole ideology. Bill Gates, it doesn't want to have a successful national health scheme in the UK, for example. He believes that doctors won't be needed in the future. It'll all be done by computers. And if you collect somebody's genotype when they're born, then you know what diseases they're going to have when their particular age. That's if they've got supercomputers that can do this. But that's what he sees. And I've seen that change in medicine. Doctors are just there collecting symptoms, making a diagnosis, and ticking some boxes as to what to treat without regarding the individual human in the individual's environment, what they're eating and what they're doing to themselves, etc. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And the patients that come to us complained that all the doctor did was sit in front of the computer screen typing in stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you don't need a doctor to type in the data when you've got electronic equipment. You stick into an iPhone, put the iPhone up to your chest or to your arm or to your head. Your problems are read by the iPhone, and the iPhone dictates to the system what the issues are, and the system comes back with treatment. So you've done without doctors, and that's what's happening in the NHS in the UK.
Well, the first time the doctor looks at you is when he hands you the script.
Yes, exactly. It's not good healthcare because there's so many things that are missing in these algorithms, and sometimes it's more an intuitive thing that you select a particular way of treating a patient's condition.
Well, they're saying that AI will probably take the place of a doctor.
That's right. Well, that's what Gates is all about, is AI. So that it's all computerized and it feeds money back into the system that's so greedy and wants to take over. But, you know, I'm hopeful that young people won't do what they're doing in some countries, socialist countries at the moment, and that is having chips put in their hand.
Yeah.
So they can do without credit cards and everything. You basically, you just put your hand in front of a reader and you get admission to the theatre or a beer from the pub or you fill up your car. I mean, once you've taken the chip from the phone and stuck it in under your skin, the next place the chip will go is into your brain. And that's what Yuval Noah Harari is talking about. Hacking humans already. I mean, even Monash have got what's called a brain plate, where brain cells and semiconductors are in a plate talking to one another and playing a game called Pong. These are brain cells, and what electronics from chips are doing now. This is scary stuff, because they start putting chips into people's brains, then they, whoever they are, have got control over that individual to some extent.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of movies like from the 80s and 90s that describe this happening.
Yes, yeah. Well, they're certainly working on it. I mean, they were working on this mRNA with graphene that has some electromagnetic properties that are being injected into people's arms.
Mm.
So I don't know. I would like to know exactly what the intention was. Is it some sort of control or some sort of ability to determine what's happening with that individual who's been injected?
Hmm.
Or is it just something by the way?
Is the graphene connected to the 5G?
People believe that it is. There are some who provide evidence that that's happening. I am of a scientific and inquiry mind. I want to know details and whether this can be validated and verified in any way. I have to sit on the fence here, but I'm very cautious and I'm warning everybody, don't take an injection of anything from Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, or any other vaccine manufacturer in the world. Do not take any injection. It will not prevent you from getting infection. It will not prevent you from dying. It will not prevent you from going to hospital. There are, as I said before, there are other ways of preventing infection and treating infection. You do not need antivirals. You do not need vaccines. Do not trust Big Pharma any longer, and do not trust the medical profession if they are insisting on any treatment where you cannot get full and informed consent, full informed consent without coercion. If you do get sick and you have to go to hospital, make sure that you've given a medical power of attorney to a friend or a relative.
Mm. What about what's currently going on in New South Wales with this girl with a lung transplant?
I was called the day before last about this. I'm not sure. I actually suggested that they try to get her out of hospital and treat her at home. And I'm not sure about the case, and I can't give any further details because the the person who called me was a doctor and it was in confidence.
Yep. Yeah, just but, I saw something the other day that said if you ring up to inquire about her, they say she's not here.
Yes. lies. Lies.
I'm conscious of your time and I'm so grateful that you came out of retirement. And
thanks, Anthony.
I feel privileged to have had an opportunity to talk to you.
And thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And I've got a public thing tonight with the Freedom Movement. Ralph Babbage is the senator who's going to be there. There are a few other people. And it's online too, I believe. So if you want to hop online, I can shoot through the details. They're expecting a large number of people. And again, it's about freedom and the ability to fight for our democracy and freedom of speech and a whole range of other topics. So it's going to be an interesting panel because I think they've got about 8 or 9 people on the panel. It's going to be
okay, great.
Very interesting, yeah.
All right, well, thank you for spreading the truth and being so courageous.
Thanks, Anthony, and all the best to you and your listeners, and good luck with the podcast. Keep it up.
No worries. Thank you.
You're welcome.
See you later.
Bye. Bye-bye.